Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Preacher Boys podcast. I make this show for you, and I hope that you really enjoy it. I have a lot of people that ask me how they can support the show financially, and you can do that by heading over to patreon.com/preacherboys. You're going to get access to exclusive content, including early releases of episodes. I've got a couple episodes right now that have been released at least a month early over on Patreon. You've got access to things like unique merch, depending on what tier you join, and you get access to some behind the scenes content that I'm posting within the group. So head over to patreon.com/preacherboys and become a member over there today. Every single supporter helps make this show a little bit more possible, especially as I continue to add additional episodes and content every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the show.
Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. To find more information about the Preacher Boys podcast and upcoming documentary, visit PreacherBoysDoc.com or connect on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Preacher Boys podcast. Today's episode is going to be somewhat of a mashup episode. I'm going to take some appearances I've done on three different podcasts and use them to illustrate three crucial breaking points in my own personal journey. The first one comes from my interview on the Church Split podcast hosted by Will Hess. In that interview, he asked about me and what my initial breaking point was when it came to realizing that abuse was such a problem within independent fundamental Baptist churches. I talk about the moment that my safe religious bubble really burst for the first time and what the circumstances were surrounding that, how I moved forward, and how that really transformed my outlook on life. Next is from my appearance on the Recovering Fundamentalist podcast with JC, Nathan, and Brian over there. And in that clip, you're going to hear me really talk about my spiritual breaking point when I realized that the theology of the independent fundamental Baptist movement was not just quirky or strange, but it played a pivotal role in so much of the abuse and cover-ups that I had seen. You're going to really want to listen in to that section of the podcast. And last but not least, I'm going to play a clip from my appearance on the 26 Letters podcast hosted by Dave and Sam Velasquez. In that clip, I'm going to talk about my breaking point that led me to starting the Preacher Boys podcast, getting my butt in gear, and getting the show on the road. I really hope you guys appreciate this episode. It's a little bit different, but I thought it would be a great opportunity for you to sample some of these other podcasts. Definitely consider giving them a listen and letting them know you heard about them here on the Preacher Boys podcast. But without further ado, let's go ahead and get into today's episode.
So Eric, you do this whole Preacher Boys podcast, and you talk a lot about the abuse in the IFB, which for those of our listeners who don't know what that is yet, that's Independent Fundamental Baptist. And so you talk a lot about that. You also have other guests on, different authors, and it looks like you got some cool shows lined up here soon I'm excited about. Yeah. So anyway, what about you? Who are you? Where did you come from? What was your background, and how did you come here?
Yeah, no, I grew up in Southern California, and my parents were staff at a Christian school. So I spent literally 7 days a week on a church property, just an L-shaped building in the middle of Banning, California, which if people don't know where that is, it's about 15 minutes from Palm Springs. I grew up kind of dead center in between like Big Bear on one side, Idlewild up here, and then just desert. I grew up there. Really all my memories are in the independent Baptist movement. It was a less restrictive church than maybe a lot of the shows that I do, a lot of the topics I cover, but it definitely still had its own little quirks and things like that. But my family was really great. Like I told someone at Idea Day, like my family always taught me to think for myself. They always said, don't believe something because we believe it. You know, we want you to understand why. My dad's even said, he said the hardest thing about raising me was that I always questioned everything. But he said that was his favorite thing about me, is that I never just took things at face value. And my brother, for, you know, had the opposite personality, where he was very much like, okay, you told me, now I'm going to do it, you know? And so there's good and bad about both of those personalities. Cause sometimes you just need to do what you're told. But I was always that personality of, why do we do this? That seems dumb. You know, explain this to me, cause I don't understand it. And, I was really thankful. My parents gave me room to do that within reason. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to follow the rules that you've got in front of you. But for the most part, they were always open for conversation, dialogue. And yeah, I was really happy, grew up in it. I mean, all my good memories are in that world. All my bad memories are. Mm-hmm. But I really didn't have a moment where I questioned the movement itself until I was probably 16 or 17. And I was starting to notice a couple things. Like one was, there was a crazy push for me to follow this kind of pre-planned map for my life. So it was go to Bible college, you know, take this step, do this. And so that grated against me. But what really burst the bubble was, there was a youth pastor out of Chico, California, who had basically molested a 15-year-old girl at his church. And his dad Wow. basically moved him to our church and just shuffled him over, told our pastor that, you know, they had a ministry disagreement, and that was why he was moving him.
Oh, wow.
You know, he took over sixth grade Sunday school. He started leading music. He literally, I'm not making this up. He literally would sing specials, and the song he always sang was "He Touched Me." I swear what? To you, that was the case. And so when I was trying to figure out why he had moved down, I just Googled his name, and the first three or four articles showed me who he was, what had happened. You know, I had already known him previously, but seeing that told me why he had come to the church. And it just kind of shook me and said, like, oh, this can happen within my safe movement. Like, we're the righteous city on a hill, but we've got this problem now. And long story short, that sent me down a big rabbit trail, like looking up, who's Jack Hiles? Who's Jack Scott? Who's this person? And I started realizing it wasn't an anomaly. It seemed to be that a church where this didn't happen was the anomaly in the movement.
One of the things you're not able to do on your podcast, or maybe just by the nature of your podcast, you have chosen not to talk a whole lot about yourself or about your own experiences. But the way we've set our podcast up, we have leaned really heavily into stories. And so I was wondering if you'd be willing to share us a little bit about your spiritual journey. You dropped a little hint, and I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, on your last episode, or one of the last few episodes. But I was wondering if you could kind of share a little bit about your story as far as just your spiritual journey.
Right. Well, and just to explain for anyone who's listening to this and is thinking, you know, why is he not sharing? I've had some people reach out and ask, why don't you talk about your spiritual side or things like this? And the Preacher Boys podcast, and for people I'm sure will tune into it after listening to this, the goal was to have a platform where anybody from any background could have a safe space to talk about abuse. And the goal is really to give victims an opportunity to share, which most of them haven't. And it's to give people who aren't victims an opportunity to understand the process of abuse and how it happens.
Yeah. And I think you've done a real good job of communicating that. And I think that's a wise approach.
I appreciate that. But since we're on the Recovering Fundamentalist, I will share my background. So, I did grow up in a tamer version of fundamentalism. It was mainly ministries that we were partnered with, or we would spend time with at youth conferences or things like that, where I saw the crazy kind of come out a little bit. And so, like, we had the normal stuff, the, you know, dress standards, the you don't listen to music with a beat kind of thing, like that kind of conversation. You don't go to movie theaters and so on. And we also, from a spiritual side, we had a lot of the you want to please God, you want to give God your best. Those kind of phrases were very common, especially it's almost funny talking to my mom about it now, because her experience in a lot of ways differed from mine being on the youth group side. of like the messages we heard were very much like, if you listen to this type of music, it doesn't please God. If you dress a certain way, it doesn't please God. If you're not involved in enough ministries, it doesn't please God. Do you want God to look at you and be happy or be angry? And just very toxic theology. And essentially my view of God getting ready to graduate and go to Bible college was, there's nothing I can do, which is almost halfway there to the gospel message. There's nothing I can do that's going to please this guy.
Yeah.
And so why am I slaving away? Mm-hmm. And for what reason? And I can't tell you how many evangelists would come in. My pastor never said this, but guest speakers would come in and they would speak freely like this, is they would say things like, even if you're not sure God's real, or even if you don't know about the Christian message in its entirety, don't you want to just ask Jesus in your heart so you have that fire insurance? Because the worst thing that could happen is you die without it and you're going to go to hell. So at least get that fire insurance and then find out more. And it was kind of my thought process. Like, I wouldn't have verbalized it this way, but I was like, well, I have my fire insurance. I have the date, you know, in my Bible, and I'm good to go. So why do I need to waste time in Bible college and all these things? So my plan was to go to Bible college for 1 year, move somewhere else in the country, do my media stuff I wanted to do, and then, like, hopefully no one asked me about church. Not going to Bible college, at least at West Coast, was probably the smartest thing. And I say it's sovereign that God didn't allow me to go, because I think that would have put a final nail in the casket as far as, like, pushing me out of Christianity as a whole. But I ended up going to the church in Fresno that was connected to the media ministry I was working at. The pastor there, I'll name drop him. I don't know if he expects advertisements on all these shows, but I name dropped him on mine, so we'll see. But his name's Joshua Ermler, and he was kind of on a path as well, rediscovering kind of what you guys are doing. It was what is the gospel? What is our job as Christians? What's our responsibility? What's the standard, and what's actual theology? Mm-hmm. And so he very heavily drove, like, I attended the church, so that was part of my job. Like, I worked there, so I went. But I wasn't at a place where I really wanted to talk about that. And he just created an atmosphere where, like, that's what everyone talked about. It wasn't the way it used to be for me growing up, where it was like, oh, I want to impress someone with how many verses I know or this knowledge that I have. It was the lifeblood of the church was, what is the gospel? What is the gospel? And it's funny, because I would go through these ebb and flows of being like, I know what the gospel is. It's Jesus died for our sins. Realize you're a sinner and accept him in your heart. That's the gospel. Okay, done. And he was like, no, you realize the gospel is for believers too. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I'd ever really heard that explained that way. And so between him and between me starting to get, I became a voracious reader. It started actually, funnily enough, with Mark Driscoll. I was the prime demographic for Mark Driscoll at the time.
Me too.
And so,
yep. Not me.
so listening to Mark Driscoll though, and I just found him by chance. I looked up something my pastor had said, and I looked him up. I looked it up. I found Mark Driscoll. I was like, man, he's so gracious compared to all the preachers that used to come into our church. it's so funny now. But he just was like, he had such a big view of God in his sermons.
Yeah.
And then he would reference people, and I was like, oh, he just referenced John Calvin. What does John Calvin say? So I was reading the little pamphlets from Ligonier with excerpts from Calvin. I was reading John MacArthur. I was reading Timothy Keller. I was reading, like, all these different people. And R.C. Sproul's Holiness of God was, like, shattered my brain. Like, yeah. And reading all these books and understanding, all this time I'd been worried about location, in the sense of, okay, what do I have to do to not go to hell? And that was what was preached, was you don't want to go to hell, so follow Jesus. And the gospel really is understanding Christ's position as Lord, mm-hmm. and our responsibility and our role as a created being to worship him. And so the location that we should be worried about is our proximity to our Creator, who gives us the ultimate way to live and gives us ultimate joy and peace, and not we want to be in heaven away from pain and suffering and struggle. And John Piper actually says, if you had everything you ever wanted, if all your family, if everyone you could ever be with was there in heaven and you could live there forever with them and God wasn't there, would that be enough for you? Mm. And that kind of questioning just really blew my mind of, like,
it's better to be with Jesus in the worst situation than to be walking on streets of gold without Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that's the core gospel message, is understanding the lordship of Jesus Christ and the fact that there is no life outside of him. And so that is what kind of pushed me into going and saying, like, I'm going to leave this. I want to start doing some of the missions work I was doing. It was like the lights were on, and it was like, how was I in church for 20 years and never understood the core principle of Christianity, which is that Jesus is Lord.
Well, I can tell you this, beautiful. You and Nathan are going to be best friends, because you said Piper, Calvin, R.C. Sproul.
our stories are very similar, yeah. And I was also going to ask you, Eric, are you sure you're not a preacher? Because yeah. That was one of the most solid presentations of the gospel that I've heard in a long time. That was awesome.
It's been a while.
Unless you just Googled that. That was really good.
Yeah. You know,
hold on. Let me shut off my teleprompter.
I love one thing that you brought out, you heavily emphasizing Jesus. I was preaching a few days ago at a pastor's conference, and my subject happened to be the gospel. And when you limit the gospel to the death, the burial, and the resurrection, and you miss the fact that Jesus is the gospel, the entirety of his life, his sacrificial death, his resurrection, his soon return, and then, as you said, the fact that our lives, our marriages, our work ethic, our worship on a daily basis, everything is in correlation with who he is, that in all things Christ might have the preeminence, Colossians chapter 1 would say. I love the fact that you emphasized that the gospel truly is Jesus and a full understanding of who he is as Lord, and that we bow all that we are, bowing to all that he is. Mm. I love that.
And it's so funny too, and it's, well, I guess sad is a better word, is that I just remember so many times, like when we would have special events for Sundays, and it was like, we're going to have a lot of visitors, so we're really going to hit the gospel hard. Mm. It's looking back now and looking at scale at the amount of, I mean, you guys have covered some of it on the show, like just the amount of trauma, abuse, abuse of people within the church. It's because the gospel was not preached every Sunday. I was working marketing. I was kind of like, pretty much at that point, I was like, man, I'm done with this. This is like a chapter that's all closed. And I haven't heard any crazy stories lately, all this good stuff. And then around 2019, in 2019, Cameron Giovanelli happened, and the Sarah Jackson story broke. People can Google that. And I was like, this is crazy. And the reason I found out was because I saw Stacey Shiflett's video, and I was like, oh, an IFB pastor is actually calling this out. And in my mind, it put to rest all of the things of like, oh, I need to do a documentary. I need to do this. I need to do that. All the stuff. My wife was like, do it or just stop talking about it. And I was like, this is great. This is going to open the floodgates. It's coming from within. This problem is going to be solved. Like, all these pastors are going to rally around because one guy stood up and did this. And that didn't happen. What happened was Stacey got attacked by a lot of people. People were, you know, writing blog articles, attacking him, attacking the victim, attacking Sarah, you know, bashing her, you know, and then pastors were literally fundraising after Cameron pled guilty. Pastors were sending out on church letterhead, you know, let's raise funds for Cameron, pay for his legal fees, pray for Cameron, you know, all this crazy stuff. And I went to my car. I got really, you know, I was really emotional about it. I was just like, for me, it was like nothing's changed. And so I got in the car and I called out a couple organizations, one of which I had just worked with a few months before, and realized that they had been supporting him. And I just said, if your church supports this person, this person, this person, this person, this person, cut ties with them immediately. They support pedophiles. Mm-hmm. And then two nights later, I was like, okay, I'm going to cut together a little proof of concept for the documentary, put that out. That blew up. And I was like, there's way too much here for me to do in a documentary. So let's start a podcast. And here we are. And we're already 30 minutes in, and I just got to the podcast. So sorry for my my long answers, but there's a lot of context to all this.
Right. And for me, and we talk about, like, Sam and I talk about this all the time, but like, context is so important for our stories and then for our environments. We don't live in a vacuum. You know, we didn't just, boom, get here. And so the context of these things really matter.
Well, because without context, then, you know, people can look at you or look at us differently and be like, well, you're just bitter and angry.
Yeah.
But there's so much backstory to something. And we thought, like, you know, the whole premise of this, well, you didn't just wake up one day and decide, oh, I'm going to start this podcast. Yeah. And so, you know, there was a lot to go into that. And we kind of wanted to dig hard and get into it. But you've talked a lot about through all of this. I don't know if there's any other stories in particular you want to highlight that have something to do with your story. But how did you go from hearing all of these things about abuse? And like you said, not leaving Big C, not leaving church or God as a whole, and still having some type of hope to hold on to.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it was I think honestly, like studying, like getting into the faith side, I think studying theology for myself really just showed me how dependent I was on the information I was getting from the pulpit in the church, small c. And one thing I identified pretty early on in that journey was, and actually it was Josh Armland, I think it was Josh that told me this, but he said the problem most people have and the reason most people leave church frustrated is because they're depending on the pastor to make up for all the things that they're supposed to be doing on their own. And so I think a lot of times we see, like, what does the pastor have for us this morning? And the truth is, there may be entire sermon series that aren't going to have anything to do. Obviously, you can learn something,
right,
but that aren't going to be directed at you. And again, if you're not having this personal relationship with God, you're not going to fill in that void in a 45-minute or 30-minute or hour service. And so for me, I think it was, you know, I saw a discrepancy between, and just church in general, like just theology and practice, I saw such a discrepancy between what I was reading personally and what I was seeing in most churches. And the same happens when it comes to abuse and the way that abuse was dealt with. So I'm reading verses that say, have no part in evil works of darkness, but rather expose them. And then I was looking and seeing cover up. And so, or, you know, a leader must be blameless and above reproach, but then leaders would not be blameless and above reproach. Or, you know, you've been not given a spirit of fear. You're not in bondage. But then my whole thing was, I was scared if God was mad at me, and I was worried that I was in bondage to the law. And so, for me, it became easy to separate the two because I didn't feel that the church, and honestly, much of Big C, the church, was in alignment with, you know, the Bible and who Christ was. And I think for me, I just kind of separated the two in my mind of, like, you know, even if I'm struggling, and I struggle with a lot of churches to find churches that are truly like what Christ, I think, intended for people. But I think by knowing, like, being secure in who God is, being secure in what the gospel is, being secure in the sovereignty of God, that allowed me to keep my faith, even if my faith in institutions and men and stuff was pretty shattered, and it still is shattered. And, based on the conversations I have, I don't think it's going to be improved anytime soon, my faith in actual institutions and people. But yeah, I think just knowing, like, the God of the Bible is so clearly not the God that would allow the abuses that happen within churches. And I think that's why I don't find myself at odds with, like, the Christian faith and what I do with the podcast. I feel like actually it's pretty in alignment with what Scripture commands us to do.
I'm glad to hear that. I mean, because we were listening to we went on a trip, and on our way back home, we were listening to your episode with Robbie Watch or Robbie Scam.
Oh yeah,
and I mean, just really blew my mind, and you know, I just it makes me sad. I guess that moving forward, it seems that if I start to admire someone or look up to them, you know, the next question in my head is, okay, what are they hiding, or yeah, what's going on, or even more, what is the system that they're a part of, and what other connections are there? And so, which I appreciate, by the way, you hosting that episode, and really, really insightful.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes, and don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Additional information can always be found on PreacherBoysDoc.com.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.